Greetings, and welcome to another edition of The Buzz. I'm Scott Simme, I'm the editor-in-chief of Drone DJ, and I'm really excited about today's guest. He's someone who took a passion for FPV and design, turned it into a business, and along the way, changed how people fly. I'm joined today on The Buzz by Andy Shen of Shen Drones. Welcome, Andy.
Hi.
Prior to drones, I understand that you were a professional photographer. Can you tell me a little bit about what you were doing and you know, why that was the field you'd chosen?
I was always interested in photography, and I actually backed into being a pro kind of in an odd way. A friend of mine, his girlfriend got a job with a design company as a slide librarian. And when they hired her, they said, you know, there might be a little bit of photography, but probably not. And she lied and she said she could do it. And so, you know, she was handling the slide archives. And one day they asked her to, you know, take some pictures. And so my friend calls me up and is like, you know, can you like go over to Danielle's office after hours and help her take some pictures? So, you know, I did that, and they really liked it, and then the demand grew to the point where it became a two-person job, and so I got hired as this design firm's photographer. And so just from working in that place, I, you know, had to kind of teach myself, because, you know, I did photography just kind of like art and street photography, so I had to teach myself studio photography. And because, you know, the design firm had designers, you know, changing jobs and moving to other firms, you know, over a couple of years, I kind of knew all the designers in that field. And so I eventually just went freelance. So for years, I, you know, worked for corporate identity design firms. And I mostly shot like large format, so a 4x5 film, and, you know, three or four shots a day, you know, work for hours on a shot. And then eventually when the recession hit, I had to really branch out. And by the end of my photo career, I was basically doing anything and everything. I actually did a lot of shooting a lot of lingerie. So instead of taking like four pictures a day on 4x5 film, I was taking like, you know, 900 a day and never changing the lighting, you know.
And when did you first start becoming involved in the world of drones? How did you get introduced to that?
Well, I mean, as a kid, I was always wanted to get into RC, but I never had like an adult mentor that would help me along. So I would build these planes and never quite be able to get them up in the air, you know, because with all the, you know, it's not like an electric now, it's so much easier. So I built these like complex balsa planes and couldn't quite get them to totally work. So I was always really interested in RC. And then when I heard about drones, so, you know, automatically really interested. And I was racing bicycles, and I really, really wanted to shoot a bike race from the air. So that's what got me interested in drones initially.
And when would this have been, roughly?
I don't know, 5 to 7 years ago, I guess. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I thought about it for easily a year or two. But you know, when I first started being interested in it, they weren't very accessible. They were just, the one option was, I think it was this company called Dragonfly. And, you know, like really, really expensive, you know, like no price listed, call us for a quote type of deal. And then the other option was these little wooden tricopters. And so I went the wooden tricopter route after doing a lot of research.
Did you build the design? I think the guy's name is David Windestall from Sweden. Sweden or Norway. Did you?
So I got the GetFPV version, which is like a clone of David's design, because, and my only reason was that David was out of stock at that time. So, you know, I got the GetFPV kit and built that up and just, you know, crashed a million times and learned how to fly.
The reason I asked about David's design is because that was the first thing that I ever built was that. And of course, you know, after I finally got it built, the very first time I put it in the air, it crashed. And, but of course, if you build it, you know how to fix it. So now did you have a background with electronics already, or did you go through that stage? So many of us have to, where it's like, you're a total newbie and everything is new for you. There's a lot to learn.
Yeah. No electronics background. I mean, to this day, I have no electronics knowledge. So
it's one thing to start building and thinking, man, I love flying these things, and now I'm using them as a tool in my photographer's toolkit. But it's really something else to take it to the next level and decide, you know what? I know enough about this and I'm confident enough with what I'm doing that I think I'm going to design and try to sell these. So tell us a bit about how and when that transition happened.
Well, I mean, you know, like, drone frames are pretty primitive things, so it's not a big leap to think that you can make your own and make a better one. What really got me thinking that I could, that I needed to make my own thing was that, I mean, back then, you know, Flight Test was doing a lot of stuff with David, and they kept always talked about how tricopters fly versus how quads fly, and how tricopters have a more organic and more beautiful kind of type of flight. And but, you know, I have a tricopter, and you know how the tail servo is. It's all, you know, very fidgety and very delicate. And so I got the idea that I was going to make a V-tail that would combine the, you know, that would have both of those, the best of both worlds. So, you know, I just decided I was going to make my own V-tail drone that would carry a GoPro on a gimbal.
Cool. And you were going to make that for yourself, or you were making that with the intention of potentially selling it?
Oh, it was all for myself in the beginning. And also, I mean, it was, you know, so wonky. You know, back then, like, no one used carbon fiber because it was thought that it would, you know, it blocked too much of a signal. And so, you know, using, what is it, G10? Is it G10? The fiberglass?
Don't know.
Yeah, it's G something. I can't remember the number. And then, you know, I found a place that would cut Delrin, which is like this super flexible plastic, but, you know, it was more accessible. So I like even made some out of this plastic, and you know, stuff was just so terrible. But you know, they flew for a few seconds. You know, it was like, you know, everything was like on KK2 also, and but the stuff I was designing was so out of the ordinary that they really needed a lot of tuning. And you know, even back then, I didn't fully understand tuning, so you know, the thing would kind of fly for a few seconds and then just suddenly like pitch up violently. Like, just, you know, it's like a real adventure. And not only that, there were like, you know, 10-inch props. It was like a big heavy thing too that was totally unsafe.
Yes. I have to chuckle and go back for just a sec when you mentioned sort of the finicky tail servo on the tricopter. My recollection from that kid or David's plans was that it actually called for a metal geared servo, and there was a specific one that was recommended. So I bought that, and I vividly recall being down in my local park, getting ready for a flight, and that servo was twitching a little bit. And then one of the worst smells I've ever encountered sort of came forth from the tail of my tricopter, and that servo just basically burned itself to a crisp with just a horrible, horrible smell. Yeah. So listen, when did Shen Drones, as a, you know, an online entity producing and selling these frames, when did that come into being?
I don't know the exact time, but I had eventually made like a 5-inch A-tail, and then I also made like a bamboo frame that was all like a 3D puzzle that required no glue. And you know, when you strap in the battery, that was like the key to locking everything in place. So I thought they were kind of cool, and so I, made a few of them and decided to. You know what it is. I posted them. This is like a real good lesson for people. I posted them on Facebook, and people would respond with that, that meme, "Take my money." And I'm like, "Oh, these are going to do great." Yes. All these people want me to take their money, So I made a few, and then no one wanted me to take their money.
How many people are involved with Shen Drones, and tell us a bit about your facility, or where the magic happens, the designing and fabrication.
it's just me. I've had people working here before, but now with this COVID situation, I just do it all by myself, and it's just in my apartment, which used to be my photo studio, so it's pretty big. So it's just in my house, a bunch of 3D printers and a lot of carbon laying around.
Do you build all these frames then on site at your place, or do you outsource anything to China or anywhere else?
Well, the carbon's cut in China and the 3D printing's done here.
Did you have to learn a fair bit about fabrication and design? I mean, my sense when I look at your website and I look at some of the really innovative designs is that this concept of designing things comes very naturally to you. Is that a fair thing to suggest?
Yeah, I guess if I have any skill, I seem to be able to imagine things and, imagine devices in 3D in my mind. And so when I first started, I just drew the pieces in Illustrator, so just like a pure 2D program. And then I, just have to imagine it all put together in my head. And then I learned SketchUp, which is like a very, very rudimentary, more architectural 3D program, which is more just like, cubes and cylinders and extrusions, very, very basic. And it was actually Ryan Gurry, who's like Drum Racing League's first employee. He was on SolidWorks, and he kept pushing me to, you got to learn this. It's like the real deal. And so I finally just buckled down, and it took about 6 weeks to get really, really proficient at it. And I do remember, for the whole 6 weeks, I had a pretty good headache almost continuously. But, once I had the mind meld with a program, it was almost like you suddenly acquired godlike abilities. You can think of something and make it real. So that was really, really cool. So that's basically it. Just designing it in SolidWorks, and that's about it.
So let's talk a bit about the increased use of FPV for cinematography and the rise of the CineWhoop style drone. What are the advantages that you see from a visual perspective when compared with more standard quadcopters?
In terms of a CineWhoop, it's more, it's kind of funny because I had designed it originally because my friend Randy Slavin, who runs the New York City Drone Film Fest, introduced me to Robert McIntosh, who was like the grandfather of this whole style of FPV. And, because Robert was kind of making his own drones and stripping GoPros because he wanted them really small. And if you see them, they're like just these masses of hot glue and, zip ties. And so he put the two of us in touch, and he said, you should make something for Robert. And so my thought was that if he didn't have to strip down his GoPro, because he had a picture of a crate full of stripped GoPros that, unsuccessfully stripped GoPros. So I thought, if I could make him a really small frame that could still carry a GoPro, then he could avoid that at least, And my solution was to make a ducted frame because, you know, you could be small but still have more thrust to make up for it. And so I designed that for him, but he never took to it. I don't think he liked it. I think Robert's one of those people that has to make his own stuff. But the funny thing about that is that it turns out that, yeah, you know, the ducks do give more thrust, but they offer safety. And that kind of opened up this other way of thinking and flying, where you could, you know, fly next to people and indoors and not worry about props chopping things up. And it was really Nurk who took it and just started doing things with it and posting it. You know, these flights on Instagram that got people to sort of see the possibilities, and so between, you know, those things, it kind of took off.
And forgive me because I don't actually know, but were you the first person in this sort of size of quad to incorporate ducts in the design?
Yeah. People had made ducted quads before, but the squirt was sort of like for your original, you know, Cinewhoop. It's like, you know, the one that all the others are cloned off of.
Now, actually learning how to fly FPV in some ways can be a major barrier to entry. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who watch Cinewhoop videos on YouTube and just really good FPV flying. And it's not that easy to get there. Do you have any tips for people who really do want to embrace this style of flying for how they can get started?
I mean, I think the best way would be through a simulator, you know, just in terms of the amount of frustration, amount of stick time you can get in without having to deal with repairs, and also being able to take risks and not being, you know, being willing to do stuff you wouldn't necessarily try because you don't want to like destroy your drone. But I don't think there's anything besides stick time. I think if you look at the people that are working now, almost all of them, almost all of the best cinema FPV pilots are racers. So racing seems to be like a really good training ground in terms of skill and also dealing with pressure. Because you know, talking to Nurk, he's like, you know, he was just on the movie set, and he said if it wasn't for DRL, I couldn't do it. You know, because like when you're on a movie set and it's your turn to go, you know, you got to go right away. You have hundreds of people there, suddenly just stop, right? The entire crew just stops.
No pressure.
Yeah. Like, you know, get your damn shot so we can, you know, get back to work. And you know, we got like, you know, 20 more shots today. You can't be, you know, fidgeting around. You can't say like, oh, let me get a couple of warm-up batteries. You know, you just got to go. And so, you know, I think that's why a lot of, you know, the top people doing this now are racers, and a lot of DRL pilots. I mean, almost all of them.
I saw a video recently, maybe a month or so ago, of Nurk piloting a RED camera on an FPV rig. And I know from looking at your website that, you know, you've got everything from, you know, very small agile models right up to this Sicario FPV heavy lifter, which you show on your website with a Z cam, or as I would say here in Toronto, a Z cam attached. Now, I have to tell you, when I see like Nurk flying these expensive cameras, or when I look at the photographs on your website, there's part of my stomach that kind of turns upside down. And perhaps that's because I crash so often when I was first trying to do this. But it's just the concept of putting something so expensive on a drone. And I'm curious for you what it was like the first time, you know, your Sicario got out with a Z cam attached and was flown. Are you nervous, or do you just have total faith and confidence in your product's ability?
Oh, it's terrifying, because even if, you know, the frame is good, you know, electronics can fail. And yeah, so yeah, it is terrifying. It's kind of funny because I have a friend here in town named Justin, and he works in video production a lot. And he's sort of been a lifesaver because, you know, he just has all these cameras and he's really interested in doing this stuff too. So he's willing to bring his Komodo or his Blackmagic or whatever and let me fly it. And, you know, it's kind of funny, like the first 30 seconds or so, you're just nervous as hell, but, you know, but like the thrust to weight ratio is really good. And then, you know, after a few seconds, it feels totally normal, and you know, just you don't have to compensate that much, you know, because it's that heavy, because it's got good thrust. And so after a while, you tend to forget, you know, how expensive the thing is, and then sometimes you remember it and your stomach churns again. But but the funny thing is, like, you know, my friend Justin, he works in video. So, like, when we were doing all this testing with Blackmagic, I mean, I crashed it pretty bad a couple of times. And he just, like, shrugs it off. He's like, no, that's, like, the cheap camera. You know, that's, like, the crash cam. You know, that's the disposable camera. So it's just, like, a whole, just whole other perspective when you start dealing with, like, real video production.
Now, if someone, you know, were looking to buy something equivalent to the Squirt, They could go to Banggood and they could find some sort of knockoff that's been inspired by your design. But people, at least based on the fact that I see several of your models are sold out, you know, you have this draw that brings people to your products, your brand. Why do you think your products have become so popular?
Well, number one is because it's better. you know, this is... So much of the cloners, it really kind of blows my mind, because if anyone should be easy to clone, it should be me, because I explained the whole process. And, you know, but still, the cloners still get it wrong, because, you know, generally, a lot of times the cloners are, you know, the people that design those clones don't actually fly, and they're just copying the shape of it. I mean, but almost everything I've ever designed has been cloned, and you get, after a while, you get to see that they copy the shape, but they don't understand why it looks like that, you know. And so in terms of the Squirt, almost every clone doesn't get the duct design right. You know, a lot of them are just straight tubes, and it's just drives me crazy, because, you know, like I said, in the blog post, I explain why. Supply the link to the proper duct profile. And the thing is, like, if you put a prop in a straight tube, it's almost a choke. It cuts off the intake, you know. And people always think about the exhaust end of the prop, not the intake side, because, I mean, probably because the air moves really fast out that side. They think that's the important side. But, you know, it's like if you choke off something, if you don't supply air to it, you're not going to get the power. So, you know, a straight tube, it actually, like, you know, limits the power. So, it kind of drives me crazy when I see these bad clones. And I think the other appeal is that I think people do appreciate that they want to support the people that are actually doing the innovating instead of the cloning. So hopefully that's why, you know, I mean, you know, there's still, all those clones sell well, because I actually don't know what they cost, but I presume they're, you know, they're cheaper. So I can't fault people if they, you know, go for the cheaper option. But I think generally if people do research, you'll know that, you know, my stuff is designed with intent, and, you know, it's not just shaped like something else.
Gotcha. I was looking on your site, and some of your products have some pretty wild and interesting names. Ichabod Jr., Gordo, Taro Mini. How do you come up with these names?
I have like a anti marketing. like, how dumb can I name something and it still sells? I just like kind of having fun with it. You know, instead of just saying, you know, the Dominator or the Killer,
Right. Now, sometimes when a hobby becomes a profession, it can kind of take the fun out of it because your time in the field might be spent evaluating your product or thinking of ways that you can improve it rather than just going out and flying for the fun of it. So I guess the question is, has that affected you, or are you still able to get out and just fly for the pure thrill of it?
Yeah, to be honest, that has kind of happened. I don't, but what's more than that, what's really killed the joy of flying for me is meeting all these great pilots and then just coming to the realization that, you know, I'm never going to be able to do that. And that really has killed the fun of it for me, because, you know, like, I've been on jobs with Gab and Nurk, and, you know, it's just like, they're like motion control robots, you know, they can put that camera on the same line again and again and again, and, you know, the director can say to them, you know, I like everything about that except I want this one change, and they'll just go back and do everything the same, make that one change, and, you know, repeat it and repeat it, and it's just mind-blowing, and that kind of has killed my enthusiasm for my own flight. It's like, why bother?
Well, I was watching, actually, one of my colleagues on Drone DJ wrote a story during the Masters about the use of drones there, and there's someone who is flying FPV who's chasing the ball right from the moment it's hit off the pin. They actually, and I'm like, oh my God, this guy's like incredible, following a golf ball and, like, you know, pulling out at just the right moment. I was stunned looking at it. One of the questions, and we're going to wrap up here shortly, but, you know, drones have improved, you know, by leaps and bounds in the last few years. And I'm thinking in terms of the flight boards and the components, designs like yours, the DJI FPV digital system. And the question is, when we've reached sort of this stage where we have these small, powerful drones that fly very fast, where we can see crystal clear what they're seeing in full HD, do you anticipate any further tech breakthroughs that are going to be significant in the next few years? And what do you think they would be as you look forward?
Well, there's got to be, right? Because I remember flying that wooden tricopter, and on the days where everything was working, I do remember thinking, like, it can't get any better than this. You know, I'm a bird. I'm just like a bird in the sky. It's just incredible. I mean, I remember one day I was flying, and this nanny had brought a kid to the field, and this was not an attentive nanny. So this kid was like chasing the drone, and I just wanted to get away from him. But after a while, I realized I could kind of fly backwards and watch him chase me, and, you know. And I was like, felt so calm and under control. I'm thinking, like, can't get better than this. This is incredible. And this was like a wooden tricopter on the KK2, you know, just, you know, by today's standards, just complete garbage. So I'm sure at some point we'll think of what we have today as garbage too. As far as what it'll be, I don't know. Like, you know, perfect control link. Now, a lot of the cinema people, they want to have like the full FPV, you know, do everything FPV, but also have, you know, like a GPS, all the GPS capabilities of like a DJI. So, you know, like one thing they talk about is, you know, when you're on a set, they'll tell you, like, go back to A, and the director might be talking to you, and you have to just hover there and listen to his instruction before trying it again. And so, you know, people want just like a position hold for times like that, you know, things that aren't in your typical FPV drone now. I don't know. You know, maybe they'll be more powerful. I don't know. We'll find out.
Mm-hmm. So listen, Andy, we're coming to the end, but I still have a few questions that I had prepared. So I'm hoping what we can do is just go through them really quickly in kind of rapid fire with short questions, short answers.
Okay.
So, one, what's the best part about running your business?
Oh, just being self-employed. I thought I was self-employed when I was a freelance photographer, but I didn't realize that, you know, I still had to work for art directors that I may not respect and have to, you know, do what they want. So, you know, I love creating stuff and I love being totally independent.
If there is anything that's a downside, what would that be?
You know, the better the business gets, the more I'm just this packing and shipping clerk. Counting counting screws and putting things in boxes and taking it to the post office.
This was triggered by our conversation, but would you consider building a tricopter frame?
No.
Okay. Tell me why you don't want to build a tricopter frame.
Well, it's unnecessary complexity, and also, you know, originally they existed, I think, with the belief that they have this beautiful swooping flight, but, you know, but all quads, you know, with the new boards and everything, they fly incredible now.
Gotcha. How has the pandemic impacted your business?
You know, oddly enough, I've done really well during the pandemic, and I don't think it's necessarily, well, partly because I didn't have to change anything. I mean, I, you know, worked at home anyway. But also just a lot of cool stuff came out during this time, so things have really picked up. So it hasn't had any effect, actually. And people are starting to start doing shoots again. So, you know, people out there still haven't shut down, so they still need their drones.
Is there anything that you're designing right now that you can give us a hint about what something new that's coming?
Let's see. There is, well, it's not a secret, but there is a ducted version of the Sicario that I'm working on. Also, you know, to carry the Komodo. Aside from that, there hasn't been the next weird, bizarre new thing yet. So kind of like in between new projects at the moment.
Cool. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like to raise before we wrap things up?
No, not really. I mean, it's kind of funny. I think most people that do FPV are pretty innovative and pretty inventive, you know, and pretty smart to be able to do this hobby at all. And it's kind of funny that even though I sell frames, I think once you do this, you're inevitably going to want to make your own frame, and I really encourage people to do that. You know, I have a lot of people that I even sponsored, and at some point they just go off and on their own and make their own stuff, and I think that's the best part of it. So even though I sell frames, I still, like, you know, encourage people to just go out and you know, design your own stuff, because it's so much more rewarding.
Cool. Andy Shen of Shen Drones. Listen, thanks so much. Great conversation, and we really appreciate you joining us today on The Buzz.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is fun.
Super interesting guy. I really enjoyed speaking with Andy Shen, and I think I'm going to try to build a Squirt 2. I know a lot of people who are flying this design and who swear by it. No, not that kind of swearing, except maybe to say damn. This thing's good. And that wraps another edition of The Buzz, which brings you the latest from the movers and shakers and makers in the drone world. I'm Scott Simme, editor-in-chief of Drone DJ. Remember, fly often and fly safely.